Hello everyone, and welcome to the most backwards compatible game dev podcast in the world, House of Games. Today, my host Odo and I are joined by a man who spent all his CPU power on his music skills, Mr. Ardavan. Before I let you in, my friend, let me ram down the doors of this week's episode of the House of Games.
Welcome everyone to House of Games, and like usual we have a special guest with us, Ardavan, and the track that you just heard is one of his tracks that he made himself, so a musician and a game developer in training. You could introduce yourself better, I think, than I could, so go right ahead and tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, first of all, hello, thanks for having me. Thanks for your introduction and the energy you put into this podcast. My name is Ardavan, last name Messi Hobody, if anyone is interested. I've been doing music stuff, so to say, for I guess maybe 5 years now. But before that, I was into industrial design, to be honest. So it started from industrial design, then into product design, and then product design for the games. And then suddenly everything blacked out, and then music. And now it's just music. For the games. And as you said, like sort of game developer, because I'm studying future games, immersive experience creator. And, you know, it is not game development, but it is game development, because like for VR platforms, but not specifically on games. So it's more like a, as it says, experience creator.
Cool. Yeah. And what are you studying at Future Games? What is the course called? And could you just give a helicopter view of what you learned there and what you can do with that knowledge?
Absolutely. So it is called Immersive Experience Creator, which is a higher vocational education. And it's 1.5 year program. And we will study like how to use game engines like Unity, Unreal, and how to use Blender stuff, like how to make content for immersive platforms such as AR, VR, like in general, XR, extended reality platforms. We basically learn whatever required to make that, from audio to 3D modeling to video editing to like whatever that is needed. So just a sneak peek of everything, and then you can choose which one you want to go deep inside.
So I've got a question. Did you see Facebook's augmented reality headset thingy?
So the Facebook one, or did you mean the Apple one?
Apple Vision Pro, I guess.
The Apple one. So even though you just explained how what you're doing and all that stuff, I'm too stupid to understand. So I want to sort of get a picture how it's used. So if we imagine that Apple headset thingy, is that kind of like, I imagine I'm using that Apple headset and then I say like, take me to the beach. And then all of a sudden is this nice music that kicks in, this atmospheric music. Is that the kind of music you meant? I can't even remember the word you used, but would that be that kind of music you will make in these spaces?
Things that I do is mostly focused on music itself, but my main genre is electronic dance music. And because it's electronic dance music, I know how to do sound designs, because you have sound designs all over this genre, okay? You have to make all those synths and everything, leads, bass, everything. You have to tune everything together, so I know about sound synthesis and stuff. Putting that aside, I have a background in instrumental music as well, because I play piano. And when you mix all of those together, you can get something out of it and then apply it to almost anything. So yes, I mean, if that music for that transition, so to say, is needed, I mean, probably I can handle it. So it is like more a matter of what scenario you're talking about, what are the possibilities. So it depends in what context you want to use that music or sound or whatever.
Okay.
So is the education mostly focused on XR, or could you also base it on, like, say that you want to do animations for commercials, or you want to do just, as you would call it, traditional game development. Is that also included, or is it mostly XR that is the focus of what you learn?
Let me answer it in this way. The traditional development for games, I mean, as far as I know, because I'm no expert in this stuff, but as far as I know, the traditional development, such as 2D games on screen, is not that different from developing for VR, like XR, extended reality platforms. But there are some limits on each side, and there are some pros and cons, basically. For example, when it comes to interaction, I don't know whether you ever played Half-Life Alyx, which is like a somehow old VR AAA title. The level of interaction in that game is just so different from whatever 2D game you can ever play. Because you can just grab whatever you want, basically. You can interact with it. You can throw it. Like, it is more like a real-life experience than the 2D game that you are only able to interact with some specific objects. That's one of the differences, for example. And then in the 2D environment, 2D platform environment, as far as I know, like, the coding are a little bit different, so you're basically coding using 2D mathematics, and you can just somehow work around whatever 3D possible scenario with that 2D mathematics tricks. But in VR, you have to like do the 3D mathematics, otherwise it doesn't work. You cannot use that same tricks. That's a thing. I try to explain it as close as possible to the thing that guy from Cryptopia Studio explained to us, but I'm not a coder. So if I'm mistaken in any of these things, I'm sorry.
No worries.
So it is not that different, but at the same time, like, if you're learning this, it's not that hard to implement it on that side or vice versa.
Yeah. I'm curious. In a previous episode, we spoke with Valeria, who is also at Future Games, and she spoke about an admission exam, or admission test, maybe you call it. So basically, she had to prove that she know how to produce art to be able to study art. And I was curious if that's the same in the field that you have, that you had to do some sort of sample game to prove something, or how does one get into the immersive experience field?
Yes, we do have the admission test. I think they call it aptitude test. The thing is that, like, the whole industry around XR is just a little bit vague. No one really knows what is metaverse, even Meta itself. I don't think they even know what it is. So the whole industry around this is a little bit vague. So you can get into it from whatever angle you think you can. And therefore, we have a lot of people with a lot of different backgrounds. For example, we have people from storytelling in our class. We have people from business, like salespeople. And we have people from 3D modeling and game design, and me from music. And we have coders, and we have everything. Okay. So it's not a matter of how you want to get inside.
It's kind of cool that the field is so new. When you start working with it, you will kind of define what the industry will be, rather than following rules and guidelines and stuff. That's very cool.
That's exactly one of my answers to one of the questions in the aptitude test. I think they asked, why would you like to study this? And that was exactly my answer, because when you're new, when you're in the front line of developing something, then you will shape how it looks like in the future. And I like to be in that front line, you know, I like to customize that.
And that's something that you have spoken about, Ruin, a lot, that when things are very new and shiny, it's more exciting because you have so much more opportunity to succeed rather than trying to get into something that is very established and has been done for a long time.
Yeah, but at the same time, the way you explain it, Ardoğan, it sounds like a nightmare to me when, when there are no rules and stuff. It sounds like moving back to Sweden. I hated it.
I get it.
It sounds, yeah, the word vague I don't like. I like when things are just black and white. So this is the rules and this is what we do. But exactly. I also see I can understand the excitement. I reckon I would be quite into it too if I were there on the front line with you fighting for whatever this thing is. But yeah, it sounds vague, but also cool, because we don't know how it's gonna turn out.
Yeah, I mean, ever since the Apple event that you mentioned, you know, I'm a little bit terrified with the advance of AI especially, and then you're bringing such a, you know, the whole thing with the Apple headset. I mean, I know people who are not deep into the technological aspects of the XR stuff may have a little bit of difficulty to understand what I mean, but I mean, this thing, if it's as good as they told us, it is doing a very simple task, which is very important. And it is fading away the line between virtual reality and reality. And that's a very big step. Although it is like something super simple. That's the thing, like, it is exciting. And at the same time, you know, you have always had that guilty pleasure that you're developing something that may take away humanity from Earth, you know?
Hell yeah. Like, when I saw that presentation, you said it's kind of like for geekier people who are into tech. But I think that what Apple proven last time is that they sort of popped a smartphone in grandparents' hands because it was so easy to use. And I fear that that's what, let's say that thing, I mean, the only thing that holds it from my grandma buying one is that it was $3,500, but say it's $100 or whatever, and then everyone wears one. I think that the ease of wearing these things and what AI and technology does is that everything becomes so easy and convenient and so on. And that's what sells these things and why people can't stop using them. And I would say that we're already living in that sort of reality because most of us are on our phones all the time. So it's just that that feels like the next natural step, that you just have it in front of you all the time. And then from there on, it will be even easier to move into this sort of matrix where we just turn into some fucking matrix batteries. And then the question is, what is being human at that point? I think it's super scary, totally.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. Man, the future is coming too fast. The future is coming too fast.
Yeah. And I also agree with what you said, that that guilty pleasure of, it is so exciting, but sometimes it feels like you're doing, I mean, I'm using ChatGPT now to help me with codes for my games, and I feel guilty for doing it because, but then I sort of justify it by saying, well, you know, I could do it myself, but it would take like 4 weeks instead of a week, for example. We talk about AI often on this podcast, and I am very skeptical to the future. And what you said there, what defines humanity? That's my thing. Like, man, I have a son. He's going to grow up in this shit? Is he going to walk around with a fucking, like, augmented reality thing on his face? It's scary.
It is. And it's really hard to understand where it's going, because I was actually looking at NVIDIA's keynote on Computex. I think it was in Taipei. And they were explaining, like, how AI is just being super integrated in their system. And they just announced NVIDIA Ace. I don't know whether you know what it is, but you basically can interact with the NPCs like in real life. You can talk to them and they will respond to you like a normal human. And man, that's just one of the scary parts they just released. You have to watch the whole thing, okay? But after that, I just thought, like, what should I do now? Man, it's just escalating too quickly. And we have either two options. Keep up with the pace, which is like not that easy. Even the companies themselves cannot keep up with the pace, because NVIDIA can't keep up with the pace of Apple. Apple cannot keep up with the pace of Intel, not Microsoft, not Google, you know. And the second option is to run into the forest.
Yeah, man, it's so funny. Oda, I always say that when something is real, that's when like people from all around the world come to the same conclusion. What you just said, exactly that is what I said like 5-6 years ago. Even like, fuck, or when I started programming, I was very cocky. I was like, hell yeah, I feel like I'm in front of everyone else because I know coding. And I told my wife back then, like, I reckon the world will turn into two camps, people who live in the forest or people who keep up with technology. Now, after having a child and sort of getting into this too much, I'm scared of being a part of that, the people who keep up with everything. Now I sort of have turned to the person who want to run into the forest, because I don't use a smartphone and stuff like that anymore because it drives me nuts. And I want to say one thing on this thing. I know we're going to talk about music, but AI is, yeah. But one thing I noticed when we moved back to Sweden last year, Odo, and I haven't told you this one, this is a dooms scenario, and you, Ardavan, who just moved to Sweden, when I moved back to Japan, we would have to fill out all the paperwork to moving here and all that stuff. So you go to the ward office, you go to the tax agency, you go to all these places and you talk to human beings. Even though it's just for a couple of minutes, it's still like interacting with other human beings. And I noticed that in Sweden, we didn't talk to anyone. Fucking no one. Because everything is applified. There's app for everything. So we don't go to a ward office, we don't go to a tax agency, nothing. Everything is sorting through apps. I started a company through an app. I didn't talk to a single human being. And I think that's really scary too, because I feel like it's slowly breaking whatever is humanity. It's sort of tearing that apart to the point where we're so broken that putting on that fucking augmented reality headset is gonna feel like a relief almost, because I don't know. I feel like technology is, it's breaking us apart just as much as it might connect us in some other ways. But I think the fundamental thing of being human is to interact with other humans. And I think that's it's being taken away from us. And I really felt that like firsthand when I moved to Sweden, because I was shocked. I told Odo many times on this podcast, I never had a bigger culture shock than moving back to my country. I've been abroad for over 10 years, but still, it's scary stuff.
I mean, I can talk to you about this topic for another podcast because I have a lot to talk about, but it is not related to anything music. So,
yeah,
but man, there's like, we can do an hour long podcast and I can tell you whatever I've been thinking of in the past, goddamn how many years, I don't even remember, but there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
To sort of take this back to music, I was curious with your style. So I had a question written down here. So yeah, I have a friend here in Japan who's making music for my game, and he's working for a very famous composer here. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, so I leave it out. But basically, I'm going there for a meeting next week to sign some papers and stuff so they make the music for my game dirt cheap. But my friend's senpai, this very famous composer, he always encouraged my friend to find his own touch and unique ingredients, so to speak, when he makes music. And I asked my friend, do you feel like you've found it? And he said, no, it's really hard. I'm still searching for it. So my question to you is, do you feel like you've found that touch? If that's even a thing?
That's a very good question. You know, it's not been that long that I'm into music. I mean, making music, because I've been playing piano ever since I was 11 years old, or 12, I guess. I mean, there were breaks in this period, but still, like, I know how to play it ever since then. And that was one of the main reasons. You know how I switched to music? Just a very short story. I was doing designing, like, really seriously. And even my first job was a package designer in a company. And then I've got multiple jobs, like graphic designer in advertising agencies, and then, like, a lot of stuff. I was in the dormitory. It was my first year in the university, 2018. I was studying my bachelor's, and I was really like hanging around a lot with the industrial design people, because I was studying media arts, but they were like, industrial design was a thing that I always wanted. Anyways, I've gone into their room and just saw one of them using FL Studio on his laptop. I knew that software is like what it does, and I was just curious to know how it works. So I asked them, can you teach me a little bit? And just explained maybe for 5 or 10 minutes. And then I started to work on it, curiosity, just digging deep inside it. And I had the designing aside until the moment I realized I have to decide between these two. And exactly at that moment I was deciding, I just realized I'm being sitting behind the sketchbook just to listen to music. I was not designing, I was just listening to the music. That was the moment I decided I have to go for music. So that's a little bit like story. And then after 2 years, I just realized I have to find that signature sound, so to say, that inner inspiration. I know I still haven't found it, but I'm getting close somehow to figuring out how it might look like, because, you know, it's hard to make music as general, like making actual music, something that is not only frequencies, you know, just making noise is easy. Making music is just damn hard, man. And it's even harder to find your music, because you have to find what is the reason, what made me get inside this, and how can I personalize it. And speaking of AI, I was actually thinking of how can I future-proof myself? How can anyone future-proof themselves? And I mean, it is going to take over everyone eventually. That's obvious. But I realized AI is just, at least on the very earliest stages, it is taking over whatever repetitive and non-innovative task. So if you can have your own signature, if you can personalize your music, you can have your own language to talk to people with your art, whatever it is, then AI have to learn you in order to make that, which is sort of like very hard. It is not that possible, to be honest. No matter how hard it tries to be you, even if it tries to be you, it finally will not make it because it's not you.
Yeah, and this is something that I talked about in our AI episode. I think it's number 10, if anyone is curious. But that AI cannot, at least currently, AI cannot create anything. It can only work on data that it's been trained on. So, as you say, AI, to me, I'm sort of the optimist when it comes to futurism and AI and things. But I think that, as you say, because AI cannot invent, that means that you have to be a real musician, I guess. You can just create AI-generated stuff, but that wouldn't sound the way it does if it weren't for humans to create it in the first place. So if you would create something from your own imagination that hasn't been ingested in a AI model, then you will have something truly unique anyways, I think.
Yeah, in that same episode, Otto mentioned he won me over, but I'm back on the other side now, Otto, just for a record, because I disagree again with this whole AI thing. But I like what you said about future-proofing yourself. That's something I also think about, and I said that in a previous episode that the story in the game I'm making now, there are some things that happens in that game that I hope that, first of all, that people discover them, because they're not like in the mainline story. It's sort of based on what you do and all that stuff. But I really hope someone will say, like, why the fuck is this in a game? And then my answer to that will be, because this kind of shit an AI will never come up with. And that's like my way of sort of future-proofing myself as well. Because I don't want the AI to, because I do think the AI, they will just use whatever's out there and pick whatever's the best stuff and make a game out of it. And most of us will play the game and enjoy the game because that's how we are. We're quite simple in the end of the day. But I want those things in my games that really makes it human or something that an AI could not come up with.
I mean, AI is gonna just listen to all of it someday and detour us somehow.
But I wanted to say, Ardoan, you sent three songs to our chat here, and track number three, because you mentioned you're from Iran, about 21 seconds into the song, I'm tone deaf and I know fuck all about music, but it's sort of, I feel like there's a little bit of Middle Eastern here, and it sort of reminds me of Metal Gear Solid 5. So when I heard this, I thought, man, this is really cool. It's very epic, with some sort of East European, that part of the world niche to it. So I thought that was really cool. And my friend who works with a very famous artist, he also have a very unique style. So I felt like just by listening to the three tracks you sent here, that really stuck out to me, that part of the song. It felt like I was somewhere else in the world, and that was really a nice touch there. But like I said, I don't know music and I can't even name a single instrument, so I don't know what it was, but it was something there that I felt was quite cool.
I mean, I have to listen again to see what is happening on second 21, but the whole thing is that it is actually music for a trailer. We were making the project in the school, and then for that project, we were making a trailer to present, and this is the music I put on that.
Yeah, it was definitely a trailer feeling in the beginning, the whole thing, but from second 21, it was something that was added there that really made me feel like, oh, this is different.
Yeah, I mean, some people said that gave him Assassin's Creed vibe.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did it unintentionally, to be honest. So the thing is that when you're in an environment, your collective memory, I think they call it. So you have some collective memories, your ear and your look and like whatever, your brain is wired in a certain way. And then you think like that unintentionally, because I've been listening to a lot of folk music from there. way they sound is familiar to me. And then I want to implement that into an environment like here, it would just blend in, you know, its own consciously. So that may be the reason, I don't know.
Yeah, I actually asked Valeria, who was also from the same school, I asked if her background, if she felt like that influenced her design at all. And now that she's in Sweden and surrounded by... But you said it's quite international, so was her. So I was curious if she felt like that others in her class from all around the world, if she felt like it changed the way she designed stuff. If I remember correctly, she didn't really feel that it changed anything. Like you, she sort of said something about probably on an unconscious level, there are certain design elements and stuff she does because of her background, like where she's from. Like you said, that your environment must affect you in some way. So do you think that have changed, or do you feel like your music is inspired by your background, like the kind of music they listen to in Iran or stuff like that?
Of course, yes. But let me show you how deep it can be. Did you know that any region on the planet, like for example, Americans, Eastern people like Japan, China, Middle Eastern people like different regions on the planet, they all have different tastes for different frequencies. So for example, on the African side, people are more used to more bassy sounds. Even if you look closer to their ancient instruments, they're more like a bassy sound kind of instrument. Now go to the Eastern side, China, Japan. They're more like on the high frequencies. Even if you listen to the local folklore music, they have more high-end frequencies. Like they're more like high-pitched. And the thing like is that your region has a major impact on your taste on frequencies. So it's that deep inside anyone. And of course, when you're experiencing a lot of different things in a different environment, which is like so many things are normal there in your environment, and when you come here, it is not normal. That difference is integrated in you so that it will appeal in some place other.
Nah, that's cool. Now that you said all that, I was thinking, I wonder if it can go down even to a sort of genetic, like biological level even.
I've heard though that, as you said, Adawan, that different cultures think differently about different tones. So I've heard, for example, that in Western music, you can clearly hear when you have a false tone or something that is just off key. But in some cultures, I don't remember where what example they use, but say that it's an island in the middle of the Pacific that had like no contact with outsiders. Then if you would play that same tone, they wouldn't recognize which ones are false tones or off key, because they haven't sort of been, like in air quotes, trained to recognize that. It's something that's very cultural and not objective, is what I've heard.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not super experienced in music theory stuff because I more tend to use my ears, because my mantra is that music comes from soul, so you don't have to mathematicalize it, so to say.
Yeah. A true artist.
I don't want to limit myself with, I don't know, this song should be in key of A minor and nothing else. No, man. I feel like this note sounds perfect here, so I'm going to put it, although it is false. Even in jazz music, I think they say there's no wrong note. So if you can just put it on the right place, it is the right note, because all of the scales are related to each other in some way. I mean, all in all, we're talking about the same keys, and you can relate every key to every scale to another one somehow. I mean, I don't think there's such a thing as off key. Yes, sometimes it might sound totally off balance, so to say. It can break the balance of the song, but...
But even that, if it fills a purpose. I like that, what you said. I don't really watch movies, but sometimes I stumble across these movie reviews on YouTube and I talk about a movie and they talk about the red thread and there should be a climax moment at some point. And it's like a Hollywood movie is following these steps to be as profitable as possible, I suppose. But when I watch like a Japanese anime or even some indie European movies, they don't seem to follow the rules at all, and that makes them stick out and pop to me. While, like, just watching a trailer for an American Hollywood movie, I mean, you basically watch the whole movie because it's so predictable at this point, especially when they follow certain rules. So I say that Myself, when I make my games, I don't want to follow any rules. I just want to make what I think feels best. I understand that when you are Hollywood and you need to make money, you probably have to play it more safe. I would say that even like a lot of AAA games nowadays play quite safe in terms of how they pace the game and all that stuff. I think that's also future-proofing yourself to just do what you think is the best thing, and then, you know, that will pay off in the end, hopefully.
Yeah, and to continue a little bit on this sort of red thread about me not knowing anything about music, sort of the same as it was for the art episode. Say, for example, I want music for my game when I make it someday. So is it possible for a layman such as myself to learn music to make it, or is that something that you have to start when you're 10, or otherwise you're like too old or something? Or what's your take on it?
Generally, when we're speaking about art, there's no such a thing as if you don't have, like, everyone has a talent. Someone is more talented in dancing, someone is more talented in designing human posture, and someone is more talented in playing violin, and like, it's different. Everyone is talented in some form of art because it is impossible otherwise. You have a soul inside, you have feelings, okay? And then that could transform in some other way, because what I think is that art is a form of transformation of the feelings into something else, which is either visible or feelable or audible. You know, transformation from your brain or your hormones and everything to something more physical, so to say. The thing is that, dude, I started when I was 19 years old. Ever since I started with it, I mean, I've gone so deep inside, and I basically watched whatever video I could on YouTube. I talked to as many as people I could. I showed them my music, and then I got the feedback somehow. So it is more a matter of effort. But the question is that, are you willing to put that effort on your music? Because you might have other priorities. For me, music is a higher priority. For someone, the coding is. So it doesn't make sense for many of people. It's not something that you can gain in a year or two. Even I, after 5 years, I still didn't reach it. The more you work, the better you get. And certainly it's just gonna, it's like everything. You reach a point of like height, so to say, very easily and quickly. And after that, just going further is way harder. And that's a part a lot of people just decline going forward.
Yeah. Sort of like plateauing, I guess.
Yeah. And after that, if you can stay alive after that storm, then you have an easier way to go compared to the previous part or section.
Yeah. And I think it's maybe like Valeria said, that to get from like a noob to intermediate, to get somewhere, she said, for art, at least, it takes about a year. But then to get from that to a master, then it takes, you know, a lifetime. But you can get started, I suppose.
Yeah, easy to learn, hard to master.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I have sort of a plan for someday to learning music, actually. I'm planning to, one day I'm gonna buy an accordion and learn how to play that. So I imagine if you can play an instrument, because I can't do anything with music, I can barely keep a rhythm. So I imagine if you can play an instrument and read sheet music and stuff, then you sort of know at least what kind of puzzle pieces you need to make a song. Because now I don't even, you know, I can like whistle a song, but I I have no idea about notes or accordions or melodies or anything like that.
I mean, learning instrument is, my father said that when I was starting with piano, it's like, go learn it as you're learning a new language. And God damn it, it's such a good language. It's so useful, it is. I mean, you have no clue, but I've had some of my best moments and worst moments of my life behind the piano. And I could just speak it out without talking. And that's the best power it gave me, because I'm not good in talking and I'm not that much of a social person. And then when I sit behind the piano, I just sometimes tell my friends, like, they tell me, what is wrong with you? And I just tell them, I need the piano. I can't speak it out.
Cool.
Yeah, I can just sit behind it. I'm playing the same song, man. And I can make you cry or feel epic or just neutral or whatever, because I'm putting myself inside that instrument somehow.
I think my way of expressing these feelings that I can't even get out of my mouth is I work out in the morning every day, and that's such a relief of everything. But when I'm working out, I listen to a lot of random music, and I think it's so amazing when you, like, some of my future game ideas, like the whole game came from listening to a 4-minute song. It's so weird. You listen to the music, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, these images just pop up, and then the game is like this, and it's like, bzz, and then it's so, bzz. And then I'm like, in my head, it's just like chaos with all these ideas that just comes from nowhere. And I have to sort of write them down, and then I start sketching on the idea. The game I worked on before I worked on the one I'm currently working on was that whole game, which is not done yet, because I decided to make this game instead. The whole idea of that game came from listening to a song at the gym. And I think that's so cool, like how music is just, it's something weird with music. It's really weird how it can hit you in certain ways that you weren't expecting.
I think that the reason with that is, I heard, I don't know if it's right or not, but as the studies say, air quotes, even when you're inside your mother's belly, the first feeling, first of the senses that you gain access to is hearing. So you can hear inside your mom's belly. I think that's one of the reasons that it is super impactful. Just imagine playing Resident Evil with that sound on. Will you ever be terrified of that? No.
Yeah, that's true. When my son was in mommy's belly, or not my mom's belly, that would be weird. When my son was in my wife's belly, I played a lot of Final Fantasy music for him from various Final Fantasy tracks. Because I have heard something that it will, they can hear it. So I thought, man, I want him to hear some Final Fantasy scores.
Cool. And now that we've spoken a bit about the past, would you like to tell us a little bit about the future? So imagine that you have all the potential in the world to do whatever you want to do. So you have a lot of experience with music. You have some experience with XR and game development. So what would you like to do in the future? Say that you would have all the opportunities that you wanted to. Would you like to become a musician or a game developer? Or is there a certain game you would like to make, or movie music, or I don't know. Do you have any sort of vision?
Do you want the absolute end of my wishes, or you want the capitalist version of it?
Either one or both. I'm happy to hear all of them.
So I'm going to go with the simple one, which is like the thing that I really want is that I just want a cottage in the middle of nowhere. Not nowhere, but basically somewhere out of the city. I have my own studio inside it. I can just do music. I'm not worried about anything else but my music. That's the whole thing I want. I don't want, I don't know, a penthouse or a Maserati or whatever else, because it doesn't matter how many houses you have. You're still living in one. You can only live in one. It doesn't matter how many Ferraris you have. You're just sitting in one of them at the time. Not that I hate Ferraris. I mean, sure, I would love it. But I like Lambo better, to be honest.
This podcast was not sponsored by Lamborghini. Go ahead.
But I would like to, I would like to get money from them. Or even a car so I can sell it and pay my house rent. Or would I? I don't have a driver's license, so it doesn't really matter. And the capitalist version would be like having my studio in a city. That's the only difference.
It's so interesting answer. I feel exactly the same. There's like the two opposite of each other. One would be I just want to make games. And in that scenario, I'm imagining just living in the middle of nowhere because it's cheaper and, you know, I don't really need much to be happy as long as I can make games. And my other version would be that I'm super successful and can start a big company in a city and have that nice penthouse and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, no one hates that, but a lot of people do not like living in a cottage out of the city, but I like it. I will not trade that silence and peace with anything else.
Well, I guess then Umeå is a pretty good candidate because you have some of the city stuff and you can have offices and stuff like that. Also, you have the peace and quiet and the northern Sweden nature and stuff. You know, with the internet, you can just do anything anywhere.
I mean, first of all, I would love to visit there. I would love to visit anywhere on the planet except like some specific places that would basically risk my life. But there's one slight problem. It's a little bit cold, man. I came from deserts.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the thing with small places, why they're small. If everything would be perfect, then everyone would go there, and all of a sudden you have a big city.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Just imagine the snow is desert. It's sand, white sand, and all of a sudden you feel like home.
Fair enough, fair enough. I'll consider that.
Yeah, but I think it's the cold. It can be sort of cozy when you're on the inside. And, you know, you have a fireplace and you have Netflix or whatever, like VHS if you want to be off the grid, I suppose.
Oh, no, no, that's too much off the grid, man. That far away. But yeah, I mean, you're making so many good points. I'm starting to consider it even more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I say visit it in winter first before you make a decision, because some people really don't like cold, and I get that. Even me, I sort of hate it, but I also love it.
Love and hate relationship.
But it's a good place. I really like it, and the sort of community we have there for game development.
A long time till winter, but sure.
Yeah. So with the game development, is that something that you feel like pursuing more, or is music more sort of your, what would you call it? Your mission in life?
Maybe. So I will pick music for music on the first place. Music for games / film on the second place. I would much rather games because I have, like, I love games more. I don't watch that much movies, but I would still like to work music for the movies. And the third one would be game development for game development.
I want to ask three rapid questions, because this is, you know, gaming and all that stuff. I would like to know your favorite game and your favorite song and what composer / band inspires you the most. It would be interesting to know.
Well, hard questions, man. I'm not super good at consuming media, especially since I have a Mac. I can't play games. But from the games that I played, I loved Limbo. It was super satisfying.
Ah, cool.
But if you want to go with, like, another shot, I would probably pick Dishonored. Dishonored was just... It was one of the games that...
Oh, wow. Yes.
I mean, I love a lot of games. I love Halo series. I love Forza series. I love a lot of other games. But Dishonored was just that spark that games can be different, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And the second question was, what song is my favorite song? That's a very hard question. Like, I mean, it's even harder than the first one, because I have a lot of...
Do you have a favorite band?
I'll get to that. That's even harder than the second question. But my favorite song would be, I don't know whether the pronunciation is right or not, but Una Mattina from Ludovico Einaudi. I don't know whether the pronunciation is right or not, but Italians don't hate me if I'm pronouncing it wrong. And my favorite, I mean, I love Ludovico if it comes to, like, anything aside from EDM. I mean, there's something to him that I can't explain. Like, the music is explaining itself. I don't have to ruin it. But from EDM artists, maybe, I mean, I love Avicii, but he's not here anymore. That was actually, he was the reason I got into electronic music, to be honest.
No, I said.
Yeah. That was, I believe, one of the first EDM songs I've ever heard, Wake Me Up from True Albion. I heard it on Beats Font Radio, you know.
Yeah, that's a classic.
But from the ones that are alive, I love Don Diablo. I don't know anyone from the audience knows him, but he's good.
Yeah, we'll make sure to link all of these in the description so you can check it out.
Sure. That's it.
Cool.
And was there anything else?
Yeah, what composer or musician inspires you? Would that be Avicii? You mentioned he is what sort of got you into electronics, at least.
I get inspirations from a lot of different composers and producers, whatever. So I get a little bit from everyone, but my main inspiration would be probably my own experiences. Because if you don't look at yourself as the main inspiration, then you can't make your music personal. Then you're basically being the copycat.
Interesting, yeah.
But I get inspirations from everyone. I get sound design ideas from Zonderling, and then I get composition ideas from, I don't know, Martin Garrix, and then afterwards I combine it something from Avicii, and then I go to Don Diablo, and then I link it back to Ludovico Einaudi, and then Hans Zimmer pops up somewhere, and then, you know, stuff from everywhere.
Cool.
That's very cool. And I'm just curious, maybe this is a very stupid question, but electronic dance music, do you also dance to any of the music, or is it more of the sort of listening and composing?
I think I only danced twice in my life.
Yeah, well, same as me then.
Yeah. I mean, air quotes, dance. I just moved to the music twice in my life, not dancing. Told you I'm not that social.
Yeah, well, that's also music that I sort of don't get making-wise. The same goes for me with dancing. So I've taken a short dancing class, and with that, I sort of get it because I'm a very analytical person. So there you have like, okay, first do this step and then this step, and then we're gonna repeat it 20 times. And then we do one more step, and that I can get into because there are set rules for doing stuff. But with just hitting the dance floor, I don't get what I'm supposed to do or why. Like, there's no enjoyment for it, and I don't get how people get into that state. Maybe drinking, I guess, but
totally understand you.
Yeah.
101%.
But I heard this guy who said that was on podcast, like, if you were to run down a hill and if you think about where you're going to place your foot all the time, eventually you will just fall because your brain can't keep up with it. Because when you run down the hill, I was like mountain running, you know, that sport when they sort of run off track or in the forest down a hill. They don't think how they run down that hill. They don't think. It just happens. I imagine it will be the same with dancing. It just happens.
But it doesn't happen for me then.
Ah, me too.
Yeah, the same for me. It's like, just do some random like spasm with your feet or hands or something. And you think like, oh, for how long am I have to keep this up? I just want to go and sit down somewhere, you know.
That's better than me. As soon as I step on the dance floor, I just fall face down into the floor. I can't keep up.
I mean, that almost happened to me. The last time was, I guess, a week ago, which I told myself, dude, you gotta do this, man. You gotta break the ice with yourself. And then my blood pressure dropped in such a sudden way, I felt like I'm dying right now. Half an hour into the experiment.
Well, I think we're approaching 1 hour, so before we start to close the episode, is there any additional questions you have, Rune?
No, I'm satisfied.
Alright, and then before we do close the episode, Ardavan, would you like to plug your music, or where can they find your stuff, and where can they follow your progress and success through to the cabin in the woods in 20 years?
Absolutely. So I have my LinkedIn under my own name, Ardavan Masihobadievich. I guess you can find it on the description of the podcast.
Yes, absolutely. We will add everything you say in this segment.
Yeah, and I have my SoundCloud. I have Apple Music and Spotify, but I'm just thinking of opting out of those because there's a whole nother discussion, but I'm just considering that and migrating to another platform. But until now, I have mainly just SoundCloud, LinkedIn, and that's it.
Cool.
Very cool. And as we talked about previously in the episode, I would love to have you back on to talk some doomerism about AI and VR and XR and stuff. So that would be really fun.
Of course. I would love to.
Yeah. Then I would like to thank you for taking the time to be on the episode. Thank you, Rune, so much for being my great co-host as always. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.